Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Dave James. Today we'll have segments with both of Ohio's U.S. Senators, Republican Rob Portman and Democrat Sherrod Brown, talking about the Supreme Court nomination and other issues. In about 20 minutes, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, Karina Nova and Tracy Townsend cover the presidential race and campaigning in Ohio, the ballot problems that occurred in Franklin County, and local issues 1 and 2 to be decided by Columbus voters. Then I'll talk with Paul Benda from the American Bankers Association about phishing and cybersecurity. And I'll wrap up the hour with Dwayne Casares. He's the CEO of Directions for Youth and Families. First up on Columbus Perspective, U.S. Senator Rob Portman, a Republican from Ohio, held a conference call this week with reporters. We'll present about 7 minutes of his comments about various issues. Here's Senator Portman, opening up with comments about Amy Coney Barrett and her nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court.
She did very well in the hearings, in my view. She was thoughtful and smart and patient. I also thought that the tenor in the debate was mostly civil and appreciated that and appreciated her thoughtful responses to all the questions. She's obviously got a very impressive background and has been highly regarded for her work as a judge and as a law professor. In fact, at Notre Dame, she not only received the Distinguished Teacher Award 3 times, and having taught a little bit myself, that's hard to do, but also the faculty there wrote a letter in support of her nomination, and a lot of the colleagues who supported her approached the law from a very different legal philosophy and, you know, would not be considered conservatives at all, and they supported her because she's so well qualified. As the American Bar Association announced last week, she got their highest rating, which is well qualified. So I don't think there's any question about her qualifications, her intelligence, her judicial temperament. She also has an impressive personal story, and having gotten a full ride to Notre Dame and graduating first in her class, you know, she was a Supreme Court clerk. Her family story is amazing. She and her husband have raised 7 children, 2 adopted, and you know, at the same time, balance that with a very successful career. So she's a model for working parents everywhere, in my view. I hope my Senate colleagues will come together and allow us to have a vote as soon as possible. I think the vote will be probably Monday afternoon, I'm told. So unless the Democrats give back some of the time that they have under our rules. But my hope is that she is confirmed by the Senate, and that you know, she will join the court and fill that empty seat with you know, a very thoughtful and you know, very well qualified person.
During the conference call this week with U.S. Senator Rob Portman, I had a chance to ask him about concerns the LGBTQ community has with Barrett and a court that could become much more conservative. Portman is a supporter of same-sex marriage. I asked him what he would say to the LGBTQ community.
Well, I would say that we've heard this before, and it has not, you know, resulted in a change in approach. In fact, as you know, Justice Gorsuch, when he was up for confirmation, some of the same concerns were expressed, and as you know, he took the lead and wrote a case that was actually favorable. This had to do with employment rights and LGBTQ. So, you know, she is she's a very thoughtful person. She has said many, many times now, I'm going to follow the Ginsburg rule, and I'm not going to, you know, say, oh, I'm going to rule on any specific case. But she's also said, you know, the job of a judge is not to put her personal beliefs forward, is to set those aside, in fact, and apply the law as written. And she's also talked about her respect for precedent. So I guess that's what I would say. And again, I look at the example with Judge, now Justice Gorsuch.
Portman was also asked if he's supporting President Trump.
Yeah, I'm supporting the president. I think he'll do pretty well in Ohio. I think he'll end up winning Ohio. The numbers in Ohio are quite similar to what they were 4 years ago. If you look at the Real Clear Politics, you know, compilation of all the polling, he's slightly up. It's about tied, but he's slightly up, which he was about tied with Hillary Clinton, I believe, at this time 4 years ago, and he ended up winning by 8 points. So my sense is that he will win Ohio, and, you know, I'm supporting him here in Ohio. I don't know how much campaigning he'll do in Ohio, to be honest. I think he's focused more on other states. Ohio is not viewed as being the ultimate swing state anymore. He may be spending more time in Pennsylvania and even Florida, North Carolina, states like that. But I think he'll probably end up, you know, doing better in Ohio.
Governor Mike DeWine has spent a lot of time pleading with Ohioans to maintain social distancing and wear masks. Senator Portman was asked if he supports DeWine's efforts.
Yeah, look, I stand with the governor on his strong encouragement of people wearing masks. He hasn't put a mandate in effect for everything, but he has made the point that the science is clear. He's also talked about social distancing and being sure that people use hand sanitizer and wash their hands, so it's not just about masks. But we do have a third wave in effect in Ohio, and I'm discouraged by it. I had hoped that at this stage, you know, we would begin to see our numbers going down across the board. And the one that concerns me the most, of course, is the infection percentage. So we have not just an increase in the number of cases, but of those tested, we have a higher percentage. And it's not everywhere in Ohio. Some counties are doing better than others. But, you know, we all have a role to play here. We do not want to see, you know, a slowdown of the economy. We don't want to see another shutdown. We don't want to see our hospitals having to give up hospital beds again with the thought that there could be a surge in the hospitals and ICUs. So it's really important that we do everything we can right now. Again, not just masks, but social distancing and using, you know, basic common sense rules on hand sanitizer and being sure that we're doing our part. The governor is, you know, not interested in, as I understand it, in shutting things down. In fact, you know, he was on the verge of reopening bars after whatever the deadline was, 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock. So he's interested in opening, but he's got to be able to do it safely. One of the things that I've talked about, as you know, is the need to open and open safely, and therefore the money for the schools that's in this legislation we'll vote on tomorrow. Therefore, the legislation that I've introduced that's got bipartisan appeal, which is called the Healthy Workplace Act, which is really simple. It just says, hey, if you spend your money on PPE and other things to deal with the virus, like reconfiguring, you know, your manufacturing floor plan or your putting plexiglass up in the office building or certainly buying PPE gloves and so on, you should be able to get a tax credit for that. So it meets what I think we ought to be doing. One, encouraging people to go back to work, but encouraging that it be done safely. And I think that's the balance here.
U.S. Senator Rob Portman in a conference call this week with reporters. Up next on Columbus Perspective, I'll talk with U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, Ohio's Democrat in Washington, about Judge Barrett and other issues.
Hello, I'm Todd Markowitz, Vice President and General Manager of Radio Ohio, which owns 97.1 The Fan. We're an equal opportunity employer dedicated to providing broad outreach efforts regarding job vacancies within our company. We seek the help of local organizations in referring qualified applicants. Organizations that wish to receive our vacancy information should send their request to the attention of Human Resources, Radio Ohio, 770 Twin Rivers Drive, Columbus, 43215. If you'd like to view our current job openings, please visit our website at 971thefan.com and thanks for listening.
There's a place to share the joy of your team winning it all, and a place to share a laugh about skiing and taking a fall. There's a place to share photos of pets or singing in the choir or the time you ate a pepper and your mouth was on fire. But we could all be better at sharing how we're feeling inside. 76% of employees have struggled with at least one issue that affected their mental health. When you share, you're not alone. Ask about your company's emotional health benefits. Visit heart.org/sharing. Brought to you by the American Heart Association.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Hi, this is Dave James. Joining me on the phone is U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for talking to us. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about various issues, one of them being the coming confirmation, it appears, of Amy Coney Barrett to the U.S. Supreme Court. What's your take on her?
Well, my take is that President Trump and Majority Leader McConnell are doing something that has never been done. They're rushing through another corporate special interest judge to put on the Supreme Court in the middle of an election, and that's never happened in American history. When Abraham Lincoln had a similar situation, as somebody died in September, he said, no, we're going to wait till the voters decide whether he's reelected or his opponent wins and McClellan wins. And that's the voters, clearly, they've already started voting. 1 million people in Ohio have voted already. And we should wait until the election to find out who wins, and that person should select the next nominee. The voters of Ohio ought to have their say, as the voters of Indiana and Nebraska and Wyoming should, on who the next president is and who the next Senate is, so they can make the choice should be the voters now when it's this late. It's always been done that way in American history. It was done that way by Mitch McConnell 4 or 5 years ago. The other thing that's really a concern here is this justice. Trump picked her because she would overturn the Affordable Care Act. He has said that. The Affordable Care Act will mean, if that happens, it will mean 600,000 Ohioans lose their insurance because John Kasich expanded Medicaid. It will mean 25-year-olds can't stay in their parents' plan. It will take away many of the drug benefits and the screening, osteoporosis screening and physicals benefits that seniors get. And it will mean literally up to 5 million Ohioans alone who have had for 10 years protections that have pre-existing condition, have protections that they can't have their insurance canceled. All that's wiped away because of this Supreme Court nominee that Trump and McConnell are trying to jam through the Senate in record time.
Why do you think the president and Republican leaders have not rolled out a comprehensive replacement for the Affordable Care Act since they oppose it so much?
I asked them. I think for 10 years, Republicans have said repeal the Affordable Care Act and replace it. They have never yet had a replacement. They've never written a replacement. They've never had a real plan to replace it. As a result, millions of Ohioans with a pre-existing condition will be at risk of losing their insurance or paying much more for their insurance if the Affordable Care Act is wiped away. For a decade, Republicans have tried through the legislative process to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They have failed to do that because the public is increasingly supportive of the provisions of the Affordable Care Act. So they've turned to the courts, asking the courts to legislate. And that's not what the court's there for.
I asked Senator Rob Portman, your counterpart from Ohio in the Senate, about the appointment of Barrett to the Supreme Court as it relates to gay rights issues. He's a supporter of same-sex marriage and pointed to Neil Gorsuch siding with the LGBTQ community on worker rights and said that her appointment and making the court more conservative, in his opinion, doesn't necessarily mean the chances improve that there could be an overturning of any sort of law.
Well, they absolutely increase the chances of Roe v. Wade being overturned. They increase the chances of marriage equality going away, taking that right away from millions of Americans, because she will be replacing somebody that was strong and supportive of those issues. There is absolutely no question that this makes it worse. This jeopardizes human rights and civil rights and worker rights. We've seen that throughout the time of this court. These are people put on the court by presidents that wanted to take away women's rights and civil rights and worker rights. That's why they were put on the court. That's what the presidents who appointed them, who nominated them, said they wanted them on the court for. That's why Amy Barrett was selected among a list of dozens of people who were examined and vetted to make sure they'd stay in line with what Mitch McConnell and the far right want them to do.
If there was a decision down the line that would, I guess, annul same-sex marriages, how could that even work? And would there be anything in American history that would compare with something like that in terms of taking rights away?
the Supreme Court 5 years ago took away voting rights, stripped away a number of voting rights, causing or allowing southern states to begin to make it harder for African Americans to vote. So yes, there have been plenty of cases of rights being taken away, the Dred Scott decision. There have already been two Supreme Court justices, Judge Alito and Judge Thomas, who have already made noises that they would like to rehear marriage equality. I don't know what happens to the literally millions of couples who have married in this country that would all of a sudden see their marriages as illegal because a few old, mostly old men on the Supreme Court decided it so.
Talking with U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat from Ohio, you teamed up with former Governor Bob Taft this week, who was also a former Ohio Secretary of State, as you are, to talk about the election, the need for volunteers and such. Are you still completely confident that this election will be basically fraud-free?
Oh, I am certain that this election is going to be pulled off with no fraud, with lots of absentee ballots cast as they have in the past. My only concern is that there aren't enough poll workers because most poll workers are a little older. They're often retired, and many of them rightly don't want to expose themselves all day to potential coronavirus. So Governor Taft, who was Secretary of State 8 years after he succeeded me as Secretary of State. He succeeded me because he defeated me back 100 years ago. Governor Taft and I are teamed up. We're friends. I speak to his government class at the University of Dayton almost every year. We teamed up to particularly encourage young people, college students, for instance, to volunteer to be poll workers. It pays about $100. It's a long day. You're trained to do it. But it's an opportunity to see democracy up close. And he and I did a PSA to encourage young, particularly young people, but anybody that would like to volunteer as poll workers this year.
How do you think people will be voting in another 8 or 12 years? Do you ever think that online voting is a possibility or any other major changes?
I think anybody that predicts what the world's going to look like in 10 years is probably kidding themselves. I was talking to an insurance agent yesterday who drives, 2 days ago, he drives every day, 40-minute drive from his home to his office. He has since March worked at home, and he told me that his boss has said you can work at home for the rest of your career. So I think there are going to be a lot of changes clearly in the workplace where lots more people are going to have the good luck of working at home, the good fortune. It's not everybody that gets that chance, of course. All the essential workers that work in grocery stores and drive buses and work at hospitals that have to show up and get exposed potentially to the virus. But I think the world's changing. I think more and more people will probably vote absentee and early mail-in voting, and maybe at some point we have a very secure system of online voting. But clearly, to me, former Secretary of State Taft and I were talking yesterday about how we've done mail-in voting in this state for decades, and even though the president has lied saying it's not safe, he is so wrong, because through both parties in our state, we've done it for decades, and it's safe and it's efficient. And it helps people not having to, if they don't want to go out and get exposed to the virus.
And Senator, I wanted to wrap up with asking you about Governor Taft. You mentioned that he defeated you in your race for Secretary of State when you were running for re-election, and that you're good friends with him now. What is the level of acrimony among lawmakers in Washington like now these days?
Well, it's not personal. To me, it's whom you fight for and what you fight against. I don't personally dislike my Republican opponents when they're on the other side of an issue. I just disagree with them. Yesterday, I don't like what they stand for. Yesterday, I went to the floor to try to get $600 a week unemployment restored. It was taken away from 600,000 workers by McConnell and Trump in August. And what are these 600,000 Ohioans to do when they've lost the income that they have and they can't find a job? And I strongly oppose McConnell and Trump's efforts to refusal to restore it. Doesn't mean I don't get along with my Republican colleagues. It means I just think on those issues they are not representing. I mean, I've heard a number of my millionaire colleagues go to the Senate floor and talk about that $600 a week for those people is how they say it. That's just too much. Well, really it isn't.
U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat, Ohio. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Dave.
You've been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. You have to carefully monitor your health for the rest of your life. And you have an increased risk of developing cardiovascular disease.
Cut. Take two. Action.
You've been diagnosed with a new purpose, to fight for the amazing life you made for yourself. To look that risk of heart disease square in the face and say, no, not me. You've been given a new opportunity to live. Get started at nodiabetesbyheart.org.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV. Here's Karina Nova from 10 TV's Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. Here's Karina.
If you're wondering if Ohio is still important in the race for the White House, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden stopped in Toledo and Cincinnati. That same day, current Vice President Mike Pence stopped in Columbus to drum up support for his ticket as well. 10 TV's Lacey Crisp was there.
And every single day, President Donald Trump has stood with the men and women who serve on the thin blue line of law enforcement, and we always will.
Vice President Mike Pence invited the Fraternal Order of Police to be his guest at SAFCO in Columbus.
The Trump campaign asked us to come out, be a part of this. He's the national FOP-endorsed candidate by police officers all across the country. Wanted us to be a part of this, gave us the opportunity to be here. We want to show our support, and we want to see the public that supports us.
I feel like President Trump and Mike Pence are just here for the people, for everybody, and not just one specific group of people.
Pence boasted about how the administration's tax cuts had created jobs before the pandemic.
I mean, after losing 22 million jobs at the height of this pandemic, I'm proud to report to you that we've already seen 11.5 million Americans go back to work, including more than 400,000 people right here in the state of Ohio.
A sentiment that didn't sit well with some in the crowd. A handful of people interrupted Pence and were removed from the audience, including Chucky Dennison, a laid-off Lordstown worker.
They bought into his fake populism, and the fact is, why they go around tout about jobs and Lordstown booming, it's a complete lie.
But Pence's biggest applause came when he spoke about the nomination to Supreme Court, Amy Coney Barrett.
And the ranking Democrat on the Judiciary Committee says Judge Barrett's Catholic faith was of concern and said, quote, the dogma lives loudly within you. Well, I got news for the Democrats and their friends in Hollywood. That dogma lives loudly in me. That dogma lives loudly in you.
I support the ticket 100%. I love what they stand for freedoms, for religion, for the unborn, for everything.
That we're going to maintain some of our civil liberties. Our liberties are being stripped from us on a regular basis.
And Pence joked to the crowd they should go out and vote. In fact, they should leave right here and go to the Board of Elections. And he says, friends, don't let friends vote alone. In Columbus, Lacey Crisp, 10 TV News.
Vice President Pence spoke at SAFCO and Sons, and we've seen campaigns there before. Former President Barack Obama delivered remarks there 10 years ago. He talked about economic recovery and redevelopment near Nationwide Children's Hospital. We mentioned Joe Biden visited Toledo and Cincinnati. While he was in Toledo, our sister station in Toledo did a one-on-one interview with him, and much of the focus was centered around jobs.
You're going to start seeing cops being laid off, firefighters being laid off, school teachers being laid off. Why? Because you have to balance the budget. And this president spent more time in his sand traps and his golf courses rather than calling the Congress together to get something done.
Thank you very much.
It looks like it's a tight race in Ohio. A recent Baldwin Wallace University Great Lakes poll has President Trump leading Joe Biden 47% to 45%. That is an improvement for President Trump. The last BW poll released September 24th showed the two in a virtual tie. During this election season, there's a lot of misinformation online. 10 TV's Tracy Townsend and our Verify team are looking into one of those claims.
Did Dr. Anthony Fauci endorse President Trump and praise his handling of COVID-19? That's what a political ad seems to say. But Dr. Fauci is pushing back. We had our Verify team look into what really happened. Here's Jason Puckett.
We're talking about a new political ad put out by Donald Trump's campaign this week. It talks about the president's handling of the coronavirus pandemic and then has a quote from Dr. Anthony Fauci. Here's a short clip.
President Trump tackled the virus head on, as leaders should.
I can't imagine that anybody could be doing more.
Since this ad came out, Dr. Fauci has talked to multiple news outlets saying he's being misrepresented in this ad. So let's verify. Did Dr. Fauci say he couldn't imagine anybody doing more than President Trump, like this ad implies? Our main source is an interview from Fox News in March. Dr. Fauci is asked about the coronavirus task force that he's a part of. Let's watch a clip.
Well, Tom, I'm down at the White House virtually every day with the task force. I'm connected by phone throughout the day and into the night. When I say night, I'm talking 12, 1, 2 in the morning. I'm not the only one. There's a whole group of us that are doing that. It's every single day. So I can't imagine that under any circumstances that anybody could be doing more.
So Dr. Fauci is specifically talking about the coronavirus task force, not President Trump. But the political ad edited the statement and put it right next to the president. From the original clip and its context, we can verify the claim that Dr. Fauci said the statement about President Trump is false. Dr. Fauci has worked with six U.S. presidents, and he's never endorsed one or actively participated in a campaign ad before. With your Verify, I'm Jason Puckett.
Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, the first woman to lead the Ohio judicial branch, continues her focus on justice reform. During her nine-year tenure on the state's high court, she's been out front in our state and on the national stage on issues including racial justice, attorney representation for the poor, and sentencing fairness. Chief Justice O'Connor is featured in our Take 10 segment this week, talking about the need for criminal justice reform at all levels.
And when I say improve our systems, I'm not just pointing a finger at police or the court system or the criminal justice, maybe incarceration, et cetera. I'm talking about the whole system. But there are certain factors that a judge is mandated by statute to take into consideration as to why they reach one sentence for one defendant and another sentence for another defendant that might be charged with the exact same crime.
And you can watch the entire Take 10 segment with Chief Justice O'Connor at 10TV.com. Well, it's no secret Ohio has had some issues with ballots this year, but imagine not getting one because you were told you were considered dead. We'll hear from someone who had this happen next. And a spike in COVID-19 cases led to the governor telling Ohioans they need to do better. We'll hear what he had to say coming up.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
10TV wants to make sure your vote counts come November. Here are some best practices for casting an absentee ballot this year. Double-check the information on your form. Review your ballot request and your ballot to ensure you filled it out right. It might sound silly, but voters do sometimes write the wrong date or identifying information and forget to sign the form. Include your email and or phone number. For the first time, boards of elections will be calling or emailing voters if they forgot something or need to fix something. Don't wait. Processing can take some time this year at the post office and at the boards of elections. And if you're concerned about your ballot getting where it needs to go, you can track it at voteohio.gov/track. To find more helpful information, text the word VOTE to 614-460-3345. You'll get all kinds of useful election links sent straight to your phone.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Back to Karina Nova, courtesy of 10TV.
The Franklin County Board of Elections sent out 50,000 new absentee ballots after a technical glitch caused voters to get the wrong ballot. 10TV sat down with the board's director to get an update on the situation and what's happening next.
Critical piece of the equipment was offline in terms of the portion of it that verifies that the correct ballot went into the correct envelope, that functionality was offline. We've resolved the equipment issue. We've tested the equipment repeatedly. We've established independent methods of verifying that the equipment is operating correctly so that we can make sure that the ballots that are going out are in fact correct.
The issue caught the attention of President Trump. He said this is evidence of a rigged election. And here's what the Franklin County Board of Elections director had to say about that.
It was a serious error, and we stated that, but we've taken the steps to correct it. And again, so I think, the fact that we've taken the steps to correct that error and make sure that every vote is counted once, and that every voter gets the correct ballot, that we've taken the steps to address it.
Now, it costs $69,000 to reprint the absentee ballots and send out the right ones. So where is that money coming from?
It's county general fund dollars that will go to pay for that in order to correct the mistake. The main thing is that we needed to get those ballots right out the door right away. And that's what we have to focus on.
10TV looked into another voter issue. This week, a Columbus woman told us her voter registration was denied because she's dead. Reporter Kevin Landers explains how this all happened.
This doesn't make sense. I have gotten now two absentee ballots. I have done everything I'm supposed to do. I was beyond like speechless and shocked.
Kimberlyn Securo says she felt like she'd lost her right to vote this election.
And it makes me really emotional because of the fact that I know how important it is to vote and it's our power. And so the fact that like there was a brief moment where I thought I might not be able to vote.
Her concern began when she received this notice from the Franklin County Board of Elections. It said she wasn't able to vote because she was dead.
So I opened the letter and it says, notice you, we got receipt from either the Ohio Secretary of State or I think it said Department of Health that you've died.
Securo says she called the Secretary of State's office and was told she was good to vote. Then she came to the early voting center to vote in person, and again, she got the all clear.
Came here as quickly as I could. I was encouraged to come, go ahead and vote. I didn't have any issue trying to vote. Thank God.
And that was Kevin Landers reporting. So how did this happen? The Franklin County Board of Elections blames a coding error that sent her a letter saying she was deceased. So far, it's the first the board has heard of this issue. Voters are already casting their ballots here in Ohio and across the country, but poll workers are facing some unique challenges this election. 10TV's Brittany Bailey digs into their de-escalation training.
It is a different election than we've ever seen.
Brian Mead is the director of the Licking County Board of Elections and has been training poll workers for this unprecedented election.
It is definitely intense. You can feel it in the air. You can see it on your social media, you know, talking with people. People are energized but also scared, all in one.
Voters can be very passionate about candidates and issues.
The Secretary of State created this de-escalation training video to help workers deal with the challenges of voters refusing to wear masks or breaking campaign clothing rules.
This person is agitated, yelling, saying this is disenfranchisement or voter suppression. Do all you can to calm down the voter.
We just tell them, you know, you really need to just calm down, you know, treat everybody as your friend. You got to realize they're going to come in here and a lot of voters haven't voted for 4 years, and just reason with them and make sure they have a good, pleasant experience.
And they're prepared for any poll watchers who might show up, and they've had them before. Brittany Bailey, 10TV News.
That de-escalation video from the Secretary of State is included in the four-part training for poll workers. The other categories focus on PPE and personal safety, voting setup, and reverting to paper signature poll books. Tracy?
Columbus voters have two issues on the ballot for consideration, both aimed at your home and safety. First, there's issue one, which if passed would establish an electric service aggregation program. Columbus voters in Franklin, Fairfield, and Delaware counties will vote yes or no on whether to allow the city to aggregate the retail electrical load of customers within the city's boundaries. City Council member Rob Doran says the clean energy ballot initiative is sort of like collective bargaining for buying electric power.
In essence, it's like when folks go to Costco. You know, when you buy in bulk, you tend to get a better price. So by utilizing community choice aggregation, you're allowing the city of Columbus to basically negotiate on your behalf. So we have 200,000 plus power customers here in Columbus. This will allow us to use that negotiating power to help give us a really competitive price on energy. But, you know, it just doesn't come with price. I think one of the big things that I'm really excited about with this ballot initiative is that issue one, we've committed to moving Columbus towards a 100% renewable energy by 2022. This is the biggest opportunity we have to fight climate change here in our community.
Issue two creates a civilian police review board with authority to launch and carry out investigations of alleged police misconduct. The call for this board grew out of the social unrest and demonstrations that played out nationwide and, of course, right here in the streets of Columbus in the wake of the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. The civilian review board would also subpoena testimony and evidence during the misconduct investigations, make recommendations to the Division of Police, and appoint and manage the new position of Inspector General for the Division of Police. Councilmember Doran says it's important to put this in the city charter.
We've unfortunately seen over and over in other cities that have initiated these types of reforms, you know, whether it's 10 or 20 years down the line, someone gets upset and they just cut the funding for the review board, or they just don't fill spots on it. So that's why we thought it was really important to enshrine this in our city's constitution to make sure that, you know, there's an adequate funding level, which is called out within the ballot language itself, that Inspector General's office is actually independent and transparent, which is called out in the charter language itself. So we think that this sets the foundation for a very effective civilian review board in our community.
This week, we saw a spike in COVID-19 cases in Ohio. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine told Ohioans they need to do better when it comes to following guidelines. He says that's the way to get everything back to normal.
It's a pathway to do the things that we want to do. And if the virus continues to roar through Ohio, you know, we're not going to be able to do those things. As we see tests go up, we would expect to see some more cases. But what we really then have to look at is positivity. And what we should be seeing is a decrease in positivity as the testing goes dramatically up.
And you can check the latest case numbers on 10tv.com/coronavirus. And we want to thank you all for being here with us today. Remember, if it affects you, your family, and Ohio, we're here to inform you and keep people accountable.
That's again Karina Nova, courtesy of 10TV from the 10TV Sunday Morning Public Affairs Program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
I'm a veteran. We hit a mine in Vietnam. When I came home, I didn't know where to turn.
As America's veterans face challenges, DAV is there.
My victory's been never giving up hope. My wife is always there to remind me we have a life to live.
DAV provides a lifetime of support, helping veterans of every generation get the benefits they've earned.
I am a veteran, but after I got out, I spent 2 years alone and homeless.
Every year, DAV helps more than 1 million veterans so they can reach victories great and small.
My victory was finding the support to get back on my feet. Now I'm getting things right with my family.
I finally admitted, with my PTSD, I wasn't doing well.
But there's more to be done and more victories to be won.
Now I wish I'd found DAV sooner. I am a veteran. My victory is just enjoying each day.
Help support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Hi, this is Dave James, and joining me on the phone is Mr. Paul Benda, who's Senior Vice President, Risk and Security Policy for the American Bankers Association. How are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for talking to us. It's National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. What does that mean?
Well, you know, Cybersecurity Awareness Month started about 17 years ago, and it's focused on educating, you know, consumers, the public, on some of the risks that are out there on the internet and in cybersecurity land.
And you're embarking on an anti-phishing campaign. What is phishing?
So phishing is one of the most pervasive threats that's out there. You know, if you ever got an email that claims to be someone else and wants you to provide confidential information, that's a phishing attack. Some of the really sophisticated ones build websites that look exactly like, say, your email login or your bank, and except for like maybe one letter's difference on that website address. And people think they're going to their website, but they're actually not. They're going to the fraudsters and giving them their information.
You know, it's so interesting because I think we've probably all gotten many of them over the years. And it's just a good thing that a lot of them are bad at spelling and grammar in their introductory notices, because if it were just the website, you'd never know it.
Yep. And well, you know, the challenge is, they started out, we like to say, you know, the old Nigerian prince, you know, wants his inheritance. Unfortunately, they've gotten a lot more sophisticated. And what they've done is they've gathered information, you know, they can buy information on you on the dark web, the name, the last four of your social, you know, easily accessible things from social media. And then they use that to craft a targeted attack that looks like it's someone very knowledgeable about you, that it could be your bank or it could be your, you know, someone else. And so it's very hard for consumers to necessarily know what's real and what's not.
So if somebody falls for that and they make some sort of a bank transaction and then find out shortly after what they've done, is there any recourse at all?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things is part of the reason we started this Banks Never Ask That campaign is to educate them on what banks will never ask, you know. And so banks are never going to ask you whether you wear boxers or briefs or whether you believe in aliens. They're never going to ask you to provide your PIN or your password unsolicited. And banks also invest billions of dollars in cybersecurity every year to try and stop these fraudulent transactions. Unfortunately, it does happen, like you said. And so there are controls in place. You know, the first thing that you need to do is, you know, monitor your accounts, make sure that the transactions that are current are yours. If you notice something that wasn't yours, call your bank immediately. Use the number on the back of your card or go to the bookmark you have on the website and call them. And there's things that a bank can do to potentially get that money back. If you act quickly, they might be able to get it back right away. If it turns out that you've been hacked, that fraud has occurred on your accounts, you're protected. Your bank is going to make you whole and make sure you get your money back.
Talking with Paul Benda from the American Bankers Association, banks, credit cards, it seems like have really gotten good in recent years at tracking what would be expected from their customers. And if they see something that looks out of line, they notify them.
Exactly. You know, that's what those fraud alerts. You know, the challenge, though, is that the fraudsters have picked up on that. The scammers recognize that, you know, banks will send you texts. But it's easy to recognize the text from your bank. One, you know, usually it's going to be directly correlated to a transaction. Did you buy XYZ item for X dollar amount? You know, obviously that's your bank because only they could know you made that purchase. Scammers will make it look like it comes from your bank, and they might say, your account's been locked. You know, submit your PIN so that we can unlock it. Your bank is never going to ask you out of the blue for your PIN. And so that's what we're trying to do is, you know, things that banks will never ask. And if there's any concern on the consumer's part, we always ask them to pause, take a breath, and call the number on the back of their credit card. Make sure you know who you're talking to. And if you're doing the outreach, you'll know that.
Has the pandemic created any new complications regarding all this?
It has. We've seen phishing in the past, you know, 6 to 8 months increase from 400 to 500%. And then we've seen pandemic-related phishing attempts. You know, obviously they're small in the beginning. They've gone up by 3,000%. So these scammers, they rely on, you know, people's fear and anxiety. And unfortunately, the pandemic has created a lot of that. And so they just try and use that fear and anxiety of the pandemic as a lure to get people to provide them information.
Just a moment or so to go with Paul Benda from the American Bankers Association. Anything new down the pike in terms of security that might impact, you know, the way banking looks in the future, or, you know, whether cards will change or anything like that?
Well, you know, I think that banks are always investing in new technology. You know, we've seen the move to the chip in your credit card, which has greatly reduced the ability for scammers to steal, you know, your credit card information. We're moving towards contactless payments. Banks are investing a lot in mobile payments. You know, everyone really is interested in seeing ways they can do things remotely. So I think that's a big area. Banks want to make it easier for people to access their money, to transact their transactions. And so I think you're going to continually see improvements on that.
Paul, if folks want more information about this anti-phishing campaign, where do they find it?
We'd love them to go to banksneverask.com. We're really excited about it. We've got almost 1,500 banks participating. And we'll reach around 7 in 10 consumers across the country. ABA's largest consumer protection campaign in our history, and so we'd love you to be a part of it.
Okay, Paul Benda, American Bankers Association, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks, Dave. Really appreciate it.
Before I was adopted, I felt like nobody wanted me. I felt like my life was already over.
At a certain age, they don't want you. You're troubled and stuff.
Even if I wanted to be adopted, who would adopt a 17-year-old?
Inside, I knew, like, I'm not a troubled kid. I know what I'm in for, why I'm here.
My biggest fear was that I would age out and not know how to be sufficient on my own.
I had nightmares every single day at my birth mom's house. It was just really scary for me living there.
I was scared. I was lost, and I felt hopeless.
I felt like, don't I deserve to feel happy and loved?
I just wish I'd gotten adopted sooner.
Unfortunately, the number of children waiting to be adopted from foster care is on the rise. The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption is the only public nonprofit charity in the U.S. focused exclusively on foster care adoption. You can help. Go to DaveThomasFoundation.org to learn more.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Hi, this is Dave James, and joining me on the phone, here he is again. It's Dwayne Casares. He's the CEO of Directions for Youth and Families. How you doing, Dwayne?
I'm good, but when you show that kind of enthusiasm, it scares me, Dave. Well,
you know, we normally talk about once a month. I think it's been a little bit longer this time, and I missed you.
Oh, I wondered why I was feeling so good. Hey, how are you, Dave? I've missed you, too.
Everything's good. Good as well as can be expected, let's put it that way, because that, you know, obviously still very complicated times.
That is certainly true.
Give us an update on how Directions for Youth and Families are doing and what you are.
We're a mental health, behavioral health agency. We serve about 6,000 kids and families in the Franklin County area. So we have 13 different counseling programs, and we have two after-school centers. Where we're at today, a lot of our counseling moved to telehealth when COVID hit. I would say about 35% of our workforce is now back into the community, with some of the school systems that we work with opening up. The rest are still operating from telehealth. We had our after-school centers were food distribution centers, and we continue to make meals there, but we have now opened them up to assist kids in the learning process. So, especially Columbus City Schools being closed, we are not able to serve the same numbers because of social distancing and all the things that we had to put into place. But we're doing everything we can, as safe as possible, to continue to serve the people in Columbus.
I saw a news story not long ago about how divorce rates seemed to drop initially when the pandemic began, but now they're on their way up again because apparently, you know, being stuck at home with your significant other all the time doesn't work for some people. But I'm wondering how that...
Even work for healthy people.
That's right.
This whole thing, I think people are still adjusting. Let's face it, folks, you know, we're still in the thick of all of this. It's not going away next month or you know, by, you know, January. We're going to be in this for a little while. So, you know, I think it's important that you start developing, if you haven't already, certain tools and certain avenues and certain patterns that are going to keep you for the long haul.
And I wanted to ask about it from a kid's standpoint. These kids, you know, who are already having difficult times for maybe a myriad of reasons, the pandemic comes along, creates perhaps even a less healthy home environment, but they're also, you know, some of them not going to school. Everything about their lives has been turned upside down, and it's not like they have 80 years like you and me to draw on for experience on how to get around it.
Yeah, and we have no idea right now what the long-term effects are this going to be. You know, we in our youth centers, we have always had this program Stride, which does math, science, and reading, and we always did it year-round. Everyone who comes has a choice of what activities they want to do, except for that, everybody had to do that. We always did it year-round because our kids can't afford to get behind. Now you're not talking just about kids who attend youth centers. You're talking about, you know, everybody. And the engagement rate, you know, I know in the, I don't know what the numbers are right now, but I know in the spring, some school systems had touch points of 50%, but regular engagement was down to 30%. So the long-term effects of this, we really don't even know what that's going to look like, but it doesn't look good. If you're only going to have a 30 to 40% regular touch points from students, that means a lot of learning has gone on hold and will continue to be on hold if we don't really develop better, healthier, and supportive patterns to assist our kids.
Recent statistics showed that in May of this year, Ohio had more opioid-related deaths than any month in 14 years. And I think, you know, in 10 or 20 years from now, when you look at all kinds of statistics, there's going to be a spike in 2020.
Yeah, And often when you have people who are abusing substances, you know, it really is self-medicating. It just happens to be with substances that put you higher at risk. And when you look at fentanyl and the damage that it can do, one bad batch of anything can start to kill off a lot of people who have been using it. And I think those numbers are going to stay with us at a higher rate than they were previously to the pandemic.
Talking with Dwayne Casares, CEO of Directions for Youth and Families. We pick a topic along the way every time that we talk, and you wanted to talk about self-care.
Well, yeah, I think it's critical. I think that we all, I don't know that people necessarily think about what's my self-care plan. So I would encourage everybody, since I think we're going to be in this for a long haul, to have a self-care plan. Actually, this would be a great activity for a family or even just a married couple. You know, what is our long-term self-care plan? And really come up with ideas around this, because self-care covers many different areas. It's emotional. It's mental. It can be spiritual. It can be social. But to have a plan for it, just having a plan can feel hopeful. I mean, trying to drag yourself through all of this day after day after day, it's, you know, everybody keeps talking about the fatigue of all of this, and I believe that to be very, very real. So what is your plan? Do you even have a plan? And what can you tap into on those days where it just becomes really tough?
Everybody, I think, from time to time gets stuck in a rut, and yet this truly is kind of like Groundhog Day, what we're going through right now for everybody.
Right, and that's why I think you need to have some type of a plan, particularly for people who really just went through, you know, life on a daily basis in a very, you know, kind of average, stable, not many ups or downs way. All of a sudden, you're getting hit with this. You're not avoiding this. Because almost every aspect of your life is being affected by this, and we have to just be planful about it.
There is the bright spot of the Big Ten starting its football season up this weekend. Maybe that could be a beginner for some.
Yeah, you know, a perfect example that listeners, we've mentioned it before. Like most of Columbus, I'm a big Ohio State fan. I usually go to all the games. I've missed very few since 1977, like less than 10. And I go to a lot of away games. Well, all of that's gone. And part of my interacting, I always look at Ohio State games. We've tailgated for years, have friends that I've been doing this with forever. I've gone to so many away games with them. And all of a sudden, that's going to disappear this year. So I actually, and we got to be safe because of social distancing. I choose not to go into bars. I'm just not comfortable with that. I'm not going to invite 10 people into my home. I'm just not comfortable with that. So I bought a big screen for outdoors, and I'm going to project games, and that way we can socially distance. I'll keep the number at 10 or lower. But to me, this is something that we have to plan to do. We're going to have food themes for it, like, you know, Mexican food 1 week, Hungarian food, Southern food, like, and just to do something different. It's we have to have things, outlets, that are different than what they were. And I think we have to all start getting creative about that. Outdoors is huge. We have to find reasons to be outside and not just, you know, locked in your house all the time.
Talking with Dwayne Casares, CEO, Directions for Youth and Families. I know that state parks, campgrounds have been very busy this year. Any sort of ability to get out into a wide open space and be around people would have to be a good thing.
Yeah, you know, spending time in nature, or even doing self-centering or centering and balancing things like, you know, yoga and stuff like that. Getting outside of your normal habit, volunteering. We've had many volunteers who have assisted us in many different ways while we're trying to get through this and keep our doors open and keep serving the people we need. Like I said, you have to be intentional about these things. You need to really take a different route. Life isn't the same as it used to be, so we need to adjust to that. And it's better to be proactive than reactive. So coming up with lists of these things to do, I think are really just smart things to do right now.
What are some of the big signs for people listening who may have family members who just seem like they're really in a deep funk right now because of what's going on? Obviously, there's a difference between being depressed for apparently no reason and having a legitimate reason to be down some.
Yeah, Yeah, well, you know, we're not talking clinical depression here. We're talking, in a sense, almost situational. The first thing I would say that if you're Browns fans, just stop it.
Oh, man. Now, that's cold.
A therapist is just not healthy to continue that type of punishment. even that is an outlet. I mean, look at how many people are just happy just about sports coming back. And even if you can't attend, what this outlet does give you. Now, the dangers of that, who knows? We're going to be seeing that. We've seen what's happened with the NFL. With family members, I think you have to be conscious about this. I will tell you, we brushed on this lightly in a talk a couple months ago and said, you know, if you know people who are isolated or live alone, you know, make sure you give them a call. I have to tell you, I got a phone call from one of our listeners who happens to be a friend of mine who I hadn't talked to in months, and he yelled at me because I didn't call him. So perhaps I will do that after today's show. But yeah, making sure you're looking out for each other, asking people, hey, how you doing? Even there's a buddy of mine who probably once a week or once every other week we do this house party thing where we just pick a day in the evening where we're going to visit that way. And we talk for about an hour that normally I would see more regularly than that, but that's not possible anymore. But that's intentional. That's purposeful. It gets structured in. And I think we have to do those things with each other.
Talking with Dwayne Cassara, CEO, Directions for Youth and Families, because you do, your agency works so closely with kids, I keep thinking back about their lives. You know, if you've got a 10-year-old, it's the last 4 years of or so of their life that they're really beginning to kind of get a taste of life. And so you've got kind of a magical time of year here with Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, all of which are going to be seriously altered this year for the first time in their lives.
Yeah, so then I think you need to not wait for those things to happen, but think, how can we make this magical? How can we, given all the circumstances, are there new, traditions that we can build in this year? And it would be good if it's something you have to plan for or you have to make stuff for, so it gives you activities and things to do leading up to it. And it doesn't have to be expensive stuff. You can make things out of paper and glue and Lord forbid, glitter. I mean, there's many little things that you can do like that become out of the norm that maybe you didn't do before, but you're going to do now because we have to make this adjustment. I even think about, you know, I feel for people who's like their senior year in high school. I happened to have loved high school, and if I would have had to miss my senior year, that would have been hard. But these are experiences that everyone's having to adjust to.
Yeah, maybe going back to like vacation Bible school and summer camp, some of the simple kind of home craft projects might be a good time for that to make a comeback. Who knows?
And a lot of people, you know, look at that, even just from a spiritual standpoint, you could actually shop around for churches now because you don't have to drive anywhere. So many people are doing stuff online. Oh, I wonder what that church down the street was like. Well, look them up online and you know, watch many of them stream their services, or then they keep them so you can watch them later. There's little things you can do like that perhaps you wouldn't have found the time to do before or just wouldn't have thought of doing. But certainly spirituality is a big part of self-care as well.
If it's going to be a stay-at-home Thanksgiving with only immediate family, great time to get online and look for new recipes and try something completely out of the box.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that for some family structures, that's healthier. Not the food, but not being with the entire family. We have talked before about the stress sometimes of family members getting together, and sometimes that can be overwhelming. So some families, this may be a break. So celebrate that, too. It's all the little things that we really have to look at to kind of change our attitude about where we're at and where we're headed.
Dwayne Cassara, CEO, Directions for Youth and Families, also, unfortunately, a Steelers fan, but also a Tigers fan.
Yeah, well, hey.
There you go. If folks want more info about your agency, Dwayne, what do they do?
They can check us out on the web at dfyf.org or call our intake department, which is working remotely, but we answer the phones, 614-294-2661.
All right. Thanks for talking to us again, Dwayne.
Thank you, Dave.
This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan, heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS AM, that's 1460 ESPN Columbus, and Sunday morning at 7 on WBNS FM, Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan. Join us again next Sunday for Columbus Perspective.